So the previous two talks were on the theme of kitchen sink simulations, and the next talk by Jared Hurley will be about the whole shebang. And all these expressions indicate the notion that in dense stellar systems we are now modeling not only the stellar dynamics but also the stellar evolution. And we are beginning to put in stellar single star evolution and binary star evolution, but still in the form of recipes. We are not yet to the point that we can have live stellar dynamics and live stellar evolution. The question is, can we do that? Another question is, how should we do it if we want to do it? And the third question is, do we really want to do that? Well, the first question, can we do that? The first stellar evolution calculations were done about 50 years ago in Princeton on the von Neumann computer by Martin Schwarzschild and collaborators. The first electronic computer, I should say, stellar evolution calculations. Around the same time, Ulam et others and Los Alamos did the first n-body calculations. So these two fields are 50 years old each, and maybe it's time to bring them together. And if you go back 30 years ago, then both fields are already 20 years old. Stellar dynamics and stellar evolution had reached a certain maturity on the level of computer simulations. And in the last 30 years, computer speed has gone up by a factor of a million. So what you could then do then for one star, you can now do for 10 to the 6 stars. Isn't that nice if you look at globular clusters? So the hardware speed is there. It's clearly possible to do stellar evolution and stellar dynamics calculations on a reasonably simple level, and every year it's going to get better. Now the question is, if you want to do that, how would you do that? Well, one thing which is absolutely necessary is to use stellar evolution models which don't need hand-holding. It is a well-kept secret that all existing stellar evolution models around run very well if they are near their owner, but if you take them, if you let them out in the garden, they won't get very far, at least not to the end of their evolution. And if you run a 10 to the 6 star calculation, you don't want to be called up in the middle of the night to ask what you do in the horizontal branch or whatever gap or oscillations you get. So you need to make the stellar evolution models more robust. And you need a very well-defined interface between the stellar evolution and the stellar dynamics and also the hydrodynamics. I'll come to that as well. Since without a well-defined interface, it will be difficult to swap modules. And the most important, the name of the game is validation. If you have the super kitchen sink or a super whole shebang simulation with live stellar evolution models, you really want to validate what you're doing, otherwise nobody will believe you. And the only way to validate something very complicated is to swap one complicated thing for another complicated thing made by a different group in a different way that you can really compare, since there are no analytical standards you can work with. So that is how you would do it. Now the question is, why would you want to do it? Well, in order to answer that question, or to begin to answer that question, we organized a conference, really a very informal workshop, half a year ago in New York in the Museum of Natural History, Mark Shara and I. And we expected that we would get half a dozen people from both fields who we know to be active in this area, just to talk about what can we do for the future and what sort of standards could be set. We invited a few more people just to make sure that we would have our half dozen people there, but instead 34 people showed up, so clearly the timing seemed to be right. And we decided to continue half a year later in Amsterdam, and 30 people showed up. So then we decided to do it every half year. So as long as there will be interest, this will be an ongoing half yearly phenomenon. Oh yes, talking about the acronym MODEST. For one thing, we are not that modest, but we are modeling dense stellar systems. And we want to start with modifying existing stellar codes. We don't want to start with making new code to model everything, but it's most sensible to start with the existing mature dynamics, hydrodynamics, and stellar evolution codes, make them robust, and make them talk to each other in a well-defined interface. Well, the way to do that is, to answer the question, why would you want to do that? If you have individual stars, you can compute tracks. And if you want to make a population synthesis model for a galaxy or for a star cluster with few binaries, you can also use those tracks. even if you want to do a population synthesis including primordial binaries which don't interact, it's going to be a lot more complicated, but in principle it's conceivable that you can study enough different cases and compose tracks for them and pull them out of the box and add them in different ways for different metallicities and different mass functions, etc. But by the time you have interacting binaries, it is inconceivable that you can do it from tracks, because if you have a dense core of a star cluster where you know that blue stragglers are being formed, blue stragglers are the heaviest stars, they sink to the center, they interact with each other, and by the time blue stragglers collide or have mass overflow with each other, there is just no way you can construct those from individual tracks. So the general consensus of our first meeting was that we really have to involve lifestellar evolution codes, not for every star, that would be a waste, but at least for the handful of stars and maybe hundreds or thousands of stars in the deep core of a globular cluster. And we wrote a summary paper a few weeks after we had the workshop. That's the nice thing about an informal workshop. Without strict requirements of proceedings, you can get the paper out a few weeks later. Actually, Alison was heading the team getting out the Modest 2 paper, also a few weeks after our meeting, so we are still on track. It just came out this week. So the idea of coupling stellar dynamics and stellar evolution is that in a single star, again, if you compare a single star with a star cluster, in a single star, we know that the reservoir of nuclear energy far exceeds the thermal energy. This is another way of saying that the Kelvin-Helmholtz thermal timescale of the Sun is much, much smaller than the age of the Sun, which is driven by nuclear energy. In a somewhat similar way, the reservoir of binary binding energy in primordial binaries in a globular cluster is far larger than the total potential energy of the globular cluster as a whole. So most of the local potential and kinetic energy is locked up in the primordial binaries, not in the external degrees of freedom of the cluster as a whole. And because the internal and external degrees of freedom can interact with each other in and around core collapse, therefore the dynamics will change the population of binaries, and the binaries will give some of their energy back to the dynamics. So it's an ecological cycle, an ecological network between the internal and the external degrees of freedom. And it is really important not only to do the correct population synthesis, but also to get the dynamics correct. You can only solve that ultimately if you want to be accurate by solving both of them. So these are all answers to the question why you would want to have life stellar evolution sometime soon with life stellar dynamics. And I don't have time to talk about these things. You can look for the details in the first summary paper. This will soon come out. It's already came out half a year ago in AstroPH. These are some of the standards we suggest for interfaces between stellar evolution and stellar dynamics cases. And some of these interfaces have been implemented already. There are examples on our website. If you really want to do things right, of course, to couple stellar dynamics and stellar evolution, you have to have a way to couple them. You have to find out how two stars collide when they come close together according to the dynamics, and how they form a merger or mass overflow or whatever. They go through a phase of hydrodynamical interactions. So one way to do that, and hopefully we will try to do that soon, is to let a star be a point mass in the stellar dynamics with a stellar evolution black box. When two stars come together, they could become two SPH clouds. They interact, and then after the SPH clouds will merge to form a merged star, then the new stellar evolution calculations will have to be reinitialized according to the mass stratification and entropy stratification we're given by the SPH calculation. We have started to do very simple calculations according to those lines. Jamie Lombardi has done some of that work, Mark Freitag, and these are ongoing investigations which are clearly in the realm of the doable right now. To give a different picture of how these different three different types of modeling hang together, the stellar dynamics in a stellar evolution They are persistent. At any given time, every star has a mass, position, velocity, and an internal stellar evolution state. The hydrodynamics is a temporary modeling. You only have to blow up a point mass into an SPH cloud if two stars come close together. So there is not much, although these are expensive calculations when they happen, they don't necessarily dominate the whole calculation. It's easy to get a balance. So that is this line. Then there is this line. These happen on a dynamical time scale. They have to be modeled by explicit solving of differential equations. This is implicit solving of differential equations on a thermal time scale. And the third line here is external versus internal. This is what is governing the external dynamics for the cluster as a whole, and these are local interactions. This is the tripartition which you would apply to current models. If you were to write a complete model from scratch, then you would have a different logical composition, and maybe somebody will do that 10 years from now or so, or whenever we get ready to do that. I see Steve shaking your head, maybe one of your students. You would logically want to have a scheduler for everything. The stellar dynamics really falls apart in the global dynamics and the local triple, quadruple, etc. interactions. Then you have SPH and you have stellar evolution, so you get a somewhat different picture. At the moment, what we call stellar dynamics is really already three of these components, and what we call SPH and stellar evolution are the remaining two components. I don't have time to go into detail, but this is sort of the logical layout. Again, we made some standard interfaces which we proposed, and there is a website which Jamie Lombardi and Steve McMillan set up. There are pointers on the Modest website to the website where you can type in your own choice for masses and velocities and distances, and you can have two or three stars collide with each other, change into a little SPA-like calculation, a simplified SPH, and then get simplified stellar evolution out there, and you can see the stellar evolution situation of the remnant. It's all very stick figure-like, but it's a demonstration that it works. So now that we have a demonstrating model, whenever we get better SPH or better stellar evolution, we can just go on to improve the way to put it all together. So this is the latest summary paper, which came out just a few days ago. In Amsterdam, in our second meeting, we also put together 8 working groups. So we are broadening a little bit, and each of these 8 working groups have one contact person who takes care of a website where we will get pointers and more information. So if any of you want to get more information, or even more interestingly, want to give us some information about any of the work you are doing, let us know, or let this appropriate person know, to put pointers on the websites to whatever you are doing, which may be relevant to all of these activities. The next few workshops will be held in the following places. You see, we are looking far ahead for the next few years. We even have some candidates for 2006, but we decided not to put them on yet. Let's first see how we go in Australia and Switzerland. The Melbourne meeting will be just a few days before the beginning of the General Assembly, so we put that together. Rosemary Martling and I will be organizing that. Then, to sum up, the basic idea of this super kitchen sink, super whole shebang, even more shebang thing is that in the past, back in the 70s, when people tried to understand the dynamics of globular clusters, the basic approach was to do take back of envelope estimates for processes such as tidal capture and other processes, where you take a particular phenomenon, like you have X-ray binaries or later millisecond pulses, and you look for a particular channel to explain that particular phenomenon. And that was, of course, the right way to start. But at some point, the wealth of observations which we have gotten right now shows us that there are so many interesting animals out there, so many different systems, blue stragglers of all kind of different types, different types of X-ray binaries, millisecond pulsars, etc., that there are probably too many different channels, especially if you have primordial binaries. There are so many binary calculations and so many different channels to make similar or different systems as an outcome, that you have this enormous range wealth of observational information, and admittedly you have a number of free parameters in the simulations. You don't know what happens after common envelope evolution. There are a whole lot of things you don't know. You don't know what happens in the late stages of stellar evolution, even with single stars, let alone with mass overflow in all kind of critical cases. But you can model those. You can give a parameter to common envelope evolution. You can give a parameter to a number of things. And again, to compare a star cluster with a star, in a single star, you don't know what to do with convection, so you have a mixing length. And whatever else you don't know about rotation, you can give parameters to. And as long as you have a few parameters in stellar evolution and good observations, you can try to simultaneously solve those. And a very early success was in the 50s already, when Hoyle and others used their stellar evolution models to predict that there was a carbon 12 resonance, which had not been discovered by the nuclear physics people, and it was indirectly from the observation of stars that that was inferred to be there. So even though this seems like a very dirty business, and it will be a dirty business, I do believe that if we keep our theoretical free parameters to a modest minimum, that we can actually have a very good chance to fit all of those together with a whole shebang calculation. Thank you.
Sounds wonderful, thank you. And we clearly know a lot about modeling stellar evolution and other elements of it, but the part that, to me, just looking at it from the outside, seems most difficult is the hydrodynamics. Mm-hmm. And you know, just as a single example, I think the process of tidal capture is a process about which there's great controversy. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, do we really have this sophistication right now? Do present hydrodynamics codes have the ability to really distinguish under what circumstances this can be a successful process, under what circumstances does it lead to mergers, many different outcomes. And so there, of course, if one can think of a good way of parameterizing the problem, mm-hmm. that would be nice. There may be too many parameters in a case like this, more than in some of the other processes that you're thinking about. But just from the outside, this seems like the most troublesome element of trying to get a program like this to model reality. And I just wanted to hear your comments about it.
Yeah, that is troublesome. But if you take one bit parameter, does tidal capture occur or not? That would be one free parameter. If you say, well, it may occur, but how often does it occur? That's still only one continuous parameter. And you can even add a few more parameters about when and how it occurs and what happens after it. With the observations, you have so many parameters nowadays, not only for one star cluster, but for a whole host of star clusters. You can still hope to solve them simultaneously, as long as the theoretical number of parameters is still significantly smaller than that of the observations, that you have a well enough overdetermined system that you can check what you're doing. And the other thing is that the same uncertainty which may give you uncertainty in tricky questions like tidal capture, that same uncertainty may be coupled to the physics of other systems which may be better observable. Since the same hydrodynamics, where at the moment there are still many uncertainties, if that hydrodynamics predicts you that there are certain blue stragglers with a certain amount of rotation or a certain amount of mixing or whatever, the more that will be observationally checked, the more you get feedback on your on the validation of your understanding of hydrodynamics, which hopefully will shed more light onto things like tidal capture. But there will always be a few things like mixing length parameter. But the hope is that we can constrain it.
I have a very simple question. Where can I find this extremely interesting sounding website?
Ah, on his computer. It's called Einstein. But if you want to go in the regular route rather than do it through the back door, I won't give the password, but here is the... Thank you.
Actually, I wouldn't mind hearing our session chair comment on how well people can model rapidly rotating stars, right? Since that's the seems to me most of the ones that you're most interested in are the ones that are going to be really rapidly rotating. And as I understand it, it's still something that one can't really do in a standalone fashion. So it seems kind of premature to think that it's just a matter of including those models in a global simulation.
Well, I would add to that, if you could do it in a few months, it would be premature to start now. But given that it is a program of, I would say, 10 years or so, I think it's a good time to get started and to learn as you go along. And at some point, hopefully, we'll get far enough to do these things. I mean, people are starting to do three-dimensional stellar evolution calculation. Peter Eggleton in Livermore with his co-workers and so. So hopefully, in a number of years, these things will shed more light on the problem.
For the stellar dynamic parts of these codes, before we throw in the whole kitchen sink, just the obvious question, how accurate are the numerical simulations? What about numerical errors? Can you run the code backwards and get the initial conditions? Or
you
are
cannot,
you seeing the thermal?
Yeah, you wouldn't expect to do that, neither for stellar dynamics nor, say, for molecular dynamics. The Lyapunov timescale, the exponential divergent timescale, is a small fraction of the crossing time. So even if you would have the initial conditions to I don't know how many digits, I think if I remember it correctly, if you want to accurately follow a cluster all the way to core collapse, you need multiple precision calculations with as many digits as you have stars in the system. So you need a million digits, I mean far more than quadruple precision, million digits precision to get 10 to the 6 star accurately to core collapse. But there is no reason to believe that any of the physical parameters are sensitive to these exponential divergences. So the real question seems to be how accurately do you preserve energy, angular momentum, those things. And we try to do that as accurately as we reasonably can. And so far we haven't seen any argument that the precision we use is not good enough. But it's always something to worry about, and it's always good to redo calculations with higher or smaller accuracy and to see whether there are significant differences.
Right, so as long as you're just asking statistical questions.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah.
A very quick question. What about cluster rotation and observable effects in core collapse? Reiner Spurzum told me, a year and a half ago at the Aspen meeting we had, that this was something that he was thinking about. Are you guys including this or planning to, or will it be?
Yes, we are. Holger was just talking about does include rotation. Yeah, and that's one of the nice things about embodied models is that you have no assumption of symmetry in any way, so you can include anything you want on that level. Yeah.